Starts us anyways. So I might as well start. Hey, anyways, hi everybody, I'm Ron and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi Ron.
It's nice to be here. I've been here maybe one or two times before. And my sobriety date is November the 3rd, 1988. Ooh. So I've been here 29 years. And thanks you guys. You know, and I'll tell you how it all started and I'll try to make it really clear, but you'll be able to hear me in the back, believe me, because once I start talking, it starts getting louder and I get the enthusiasm. And it's just like, oh my God. But yeah, when it all started, I was 24 years old and I'm a longshoreman. So I worked the waterfront and drinking was my everyday life. And it was. And I'd go to work and I would drink and I drank all the time. And, you know, I just couldn't stop, you know, I just couldn't stop drinking and doing what I was doing. And, you know, no matter what I tried, it just kept getting worse and worse. So you guys kind of know the story because you have your own story, right? You know, it was absolute, every day was absolute hell. You know, honestly, I would wake up in the morning and I'd go like, oh my God, I can't do this. And I would just struggle every single day just to get up. And, you know, you talk about fear and you talk about loneliness and you talk about wanting to die, but wanting to live and not wanting to know what to do, where to go and who to talk to. That was my life every day. You know, so, and I started this waterfront and believe it or not, Jolene's actually, she works on the waterfront with me. So we both work on the waterfront. Oh, I don't know if I should have said that, but anyways, she'll tell you her story. But so I started when I was 14 years old on the waterfront. So I was working like forklifts and I'm unloading ships and ships full of booze and containers full of booze and it was booze just every single day, you know. So you can only get so sick in life. And, you know, that's what happened to me. Is I just got so pretty much sick and tired of being sick and tired. I needed help. And no matter what I did, is I needed help. So I asked my union for help and this is how my journey started. Is on the other end of that phone, I asked this guy, I said, I need some help. And he said, can you quit just for today? I'm like, well, that's a stupid question. And I said, why are you asking me if you can quit just for one day? He said, well, if you can quit for one day, I'll help you tomorrow. I said, of course I can quit for one day, but I can't quit for like a week. I can't quit for a month and stuff like this. But of course, anybody can quit for a day. And I knew that, but I believed that inside that I could quit just for one day. And I did. So, and that's how my journey started. The next day he came, he picked me up. And I don't know if you know what sponsors are, but they help you. And they walk with you and they teach you the 12 steps. And you know what? They pretty much don't tell you anything. They just walk with you. You know, and if you have people telling you what to do and phone me every day, I don't know if that's, you know, for me, that probably wouldn't work. I had somebody just love the heck out of me and pick me up and take me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. So, but that wasn't my first journey into AA. He picked me up. And he says, I'm going to help you. And he's giving me a ride somewhere. So he says, just pack up your stuff and I'm going to give you a ride somewhere. And I'm like, oh, perfect. I said, do they have tennis courts? He said, no. And I said, okay, do they have swimming pools? He says, no, no. I said, ping pong tables? No, no, no. He mentioned some word I've never heard it before, detox. And I'm like, what? What is that? And so I'm asking him all these questions. And he says, oh, yeah, you'll be okay. I hated it. I don't know if anybody's been to detox. I hated it. It was horrible. I mean, I was dying as a dying can get. I needed help. And now I'm stuck in, you know, this detox. And it was the best thing for me. And little did I know. You know, I didn't know how to stay sober. Like, if I knew how to stay sober, I would have stayed sober. I didn't know how to stay sober. I needed help. And I needed help quick. You know, I was probably 90-something pounds when I came to AA. and now I'm a little more than 90 pounds and over near the 30 years or 29 years. And, you know, that's how my journey started. So I went to detox. I really didn't like it. And when I was in detox, I saw people as they were leaving detox. They were doing something for an hour. And I see them over there. And I'm not over there, but they're over there. And then they all got out of it. And they were all happy. And I'm like looking at the people. I'm like, what did you guys just do? You know, they said, oh, we went to a meeting. I'm like, what's a meeting? So, and that's how I didn't know nothing about AA. I didn't know nothing about detox. But, you know, what they said to me when I was there is you're going to die. And that's about the only thing I remember in detox is you're going to die. If you continue to drink and do what you're doing, you're going to die. And my everyday life was party. It was like living, dying, party. So I needed a new way to live life. And that's how the journey started. And then my sponsor at the time, he picked me up and we started going to meetings. And I got involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm one of these people still today. My nickname is Right on Ron. So if you're ever around the fellowship anywhere, you know, you'll probably hear my name somewhere. And hopefully it'll be good. You know, because I've always been in the middle of AA. I wanted this more than anything in my entire life. I wanted to stay sober. I would have given anything. I would have given any amount of money. I would have given anything. Just give me anything. Tell me anything in order to stay sober. And like people were happy. I didn't even know what happy was. Like, how can you be happy and be sober? I didn't know how to be happy and be sober. But, you know, we're taught that here. You know, you stay long enough and you do the work, and I'll talk about the work because I do have some time. There's no way I can do a talk with you without talking a little bit about the 12 steps, because I'm one of those people who are passionate about the big book, and I'm passionate about the 12 steps. You know, and where fellowship, this is kind of like the fellowship. This is where, you know, you get to hear good speakers and you can look at girls or guys and, you know, you go to a meeting, you're happy for an hour, but you have to go and live life. This is the fellowship. The program is the 12 steps. So the fellowship, going to meetings, will get you sober. It's pretty well not going to keep you sober. You might think going to 90 meetings in 90 days or 100 meetings in 100 days is going to keep you sober, and it might keep you sober, but it's not going to keep you sober long term. If you want what we have, and they read it, if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any lengths, then you already take certain steps. People, we really have to do these steps. You know, so I got in the middle of AA, and I got involved in service. I got involved with absolutely anything they told me to do here. I did. You know, and you hear people say, oh, don't ever turn down a request. Well, I was one of those people. And then after about 10 years, I'm like, they sucked me in. Right. So if they tell you don't ever turn down an A request, I think you should do it pretty well for your first 10 years and get sucked in like I did, because it just changed my life. Oh, would you like to do this? Yes. Would you like to do this? Yes. Would you like to go pick up those people? Yes. Would you like to go to this meeting? Would you like to do service? Would you like to do coffee? I'll do it all. I'll do anything you want if it means staying sober. I wanted this. I still want it today after all these years. I still go to meetings today. I still go and speak at other places and high schools and, you know, hospitals. And I was just on Hornby Island and I took the message over there and to a friend to, you know, I'm even my friend over in Hornby Island, I'm just going to talk about it because I was just there about a month ago. This girl, it's a friend of mine. She was in the hospital for 3 years. She didn't expect to be in the hospital for 3 years, but she only went out drinking one night. That's it. She ended up into a coma downtown East End, and she was so severely bad, she almost died. So she had to learn how to walk for 3 years. She was in the hospital. So she just got out, and I visited her about a month ago. And the very first thing I did with her is I took her through the steps. You know, so, you know, she had to learn how to walk. She had to learn how to talk. You know, any of us here. We didn't plan on going out there and ending up here. We didn't. We drank and we thought it was a party and, you know. But the truth about it is, it's not a party. The truth about it is, I'm going to tell you, the truth about it is the solution has always been within me and I didn't know what the problem was. So now I'm going to get actually into the 12 steps. See, I didn't know what an alcoholic was. And I thought an alcoholic is just somebody who comes from Maine and Hastings. I didn't know what an alcoholic was. And for the information I have today, I would have paid anything for. So that's why when I came here, I got involved in this book. And it's the first 103 pages. You might think it's the first 164 pages, but they haven't changed that since they wrote it, the first 164 pages. But if you're talking about the steps, it's 103 pages because step 12 ends at 103, right? So I read this book, I studied it and I studied. So you know what I did is I went to a lot of meetings and I wanted what you had and I wanted to do all of it. So I wanted to be a sponsor. I had 2 months sober. I didn't know anything about the steps and I'm sober. I want to be a sponsor. So guess what I did? I became a sponsor. And I was a terrible sponsor. But you know what it did? I'll tell you what happened to me is I had to stay ahead of you the whole time. So you would come and say, hey, Ron, how do you do step one? I'd say, oh, just give it a minute or give it like a day and I'll get back to you. And I'm power reading through the steps and I'm asking people. And then I would learn a little bit about the steps and I'll learn a little more about the steps. And I'm passing no message or nothing on, but I'm trying to pass on what I've learned from this big book and the pages in the big book. I believe it. I still believe it today. The first 103 pages. Or you can say the whole big book, but I'm talking about the steps. So, you know, I always stayed ahead of the game. I tried because I wanted this. I didn't want to be, you know, just sober. I wanted the sobriety. I wanted the God thing. I wanted to know what an alcoholic is. And I'm going to tell you what an alcoholic is. An alcoholic is someone who has these symptoms, you know, this obsession of the mind and this allergy. And if you don't know what that is, the obsession is the mind of the mind is your mind is going to lie and convince you that it's okay or it's not okay to drink. Okay? Now that's the obsession of the mind, and that's all I see is alcohol. That's all I see is alcohol, and I'm on my way. Okay, but a lot of people don't talk about what happens before you even think about alcohol. I'm gonna tell you, get a warning. Okay, and I'm going to tell you what this warning is before you even pick up a drink. I'm going to tell you what your warning is, and it's called the spiritual malady. And what that is Dr. Silkworth, which was Bill Wilson's doctor, the guy who started AA, his doctor. He said this. He said, you know, something happens before you even think about drinking, and it's the spiritual malady. And what that means is I'm irritable, restless, discontent. So anytime you don't feel like spiritually kind of like okay, you're not on good grounds, and you're not. If you're kind of like in your heart, I'll just give you a little bit of a clue. If you're praying, you know, or if you're in your heart, and I'm talking about God is in our heart, and if that's where you're at, you're gonna be okay for a while, right? So this spiritual malady happens before I even think about drinking. So what happens is I'm irritable, restless, discontent. Should I? Shouldn't I? You guys ever feel like that? Should I? Shouldn't I? Oh, maybe I'm not going to stay here. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. That's the spiritual malady. That's your warning that something's wrong. And I didn't realize that. So what happens after that is the first symptom. And what happens if I'm irritable, restless, discontent, and I'm in spiritual pain? So if you're irritable, restless, discontent, and maybe a lot of people are here, are in the spiritual malady. And if you're kind of like that, do you get me? You go to the first symptom, and the first symptom is the obsession of the mind. So now I'm actually thinking about alcohol, or I'm thinking about other things, but I'm thinking about alcohol. And if you're thinking about alcohol enough, you're really on not good grounds. You probably are going to drink. And I don't want to see you drink. Now you can stop it at that point there. You're thinking about alcohol, and it's like, you know, you might even tell your counselor, I want to drink. I'm thirsty. I want to drink. I need to get out of here. You're not on really good grounds about that time, and you're not. And the only way to change that, the book tells me, is you need some sort of psychic change. That's what the big book says, psychic change. That's to see things differently. And I can't give you that, but we can lead you to it. And what we're leading you to is a solution, okay? But you need to know what's going on here. So, and we need to know what the problem is. And the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than his body. So what's your main problem? Is my thinking. Because is alcohol the problem? Is it? Absolutely not. Alcohol is not your problem. My thinking is the problem because my thinking gets me there and tells me, yeah, it's okay, or maybe it's not okay. So alcohol is really not the problem. It's only a symptom of the problem. So what's the problem? What's your problem in life? We pretty much only have one problem in life. It's our thinking. Your thinking. Do you know why you're here tonight? I'm going to tell you why you're here tonight and how you even got here tonight. Every single one of you. I'm going to tell you how you got here. And I don't know any of you guys, but I'm going to tell you how you got here. Your heart got you here. If your head did not get you here, because your head will send you out of here. Your head will tell you, what the heck am I going to go to treatment for? But your heart was louder than your thinking, and your heart said, look, I need help. I'm desperate here. I need some help. I need treatment. And he came here. And it's no different with me, how I got here. I got here the same way as you. My heart got me here. And why I keep talking about heart is, I could say God, but I'm talking about our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a place which is indeed miraculous. Okay, this is what the big book says. So I'm just quoting the big book. That's on page 55, right? And it talks about our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a place which is indeed miraculous. Our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a place which is indeed miraculous. That's in the big book too. It talks about our members have tapped an unexpected inner resource which they presently use as a power greater than themselves. So we all have this power within us. So anytime you hear power from the big book, they're talking about God. And if you hear powerless, they're talking about you don't have God. So you know how it says we admitted we're powerless over alcohol? Means you stopped listening to God. You stopped listening to your heart. You stopped praying. You stopped listening to your heart. And I'm going with what the book says. I'm not making this stuff up. And I'm passionate about the book. And this is what the book says. So what's the problem? What's your problem? You're all here like, what's the problem? The problem is my thinking got me here. But little did I know that the problem I had within me is my mind, but I also had the solution. And what's the solution? Okay, not what's the solution, because I'm going to make this very crystal clear what the big book says, is where is the solution? The solution is within you too. And I didn't even realize that. The solution's actually in your heart. The solution is God. But it tells you where God is. Our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a place which is indeed miraculous. So where's God? I'm not talking about who God is. You can believe whoever. Hey, I'm not there. I'm not here for that. I'm here to tell you, like, you know, my story and a little bit about the book. So where's God? In my heart. I had the solution the whole time, but my mind got in the way. That's trouble. That's really bad news. But now I know the difference between the problem and solution. And what's the solution? God. Where's God? In my heart. So there are steps one, two, and three is living this every single day. And I didn't realize that. I didn't realize how important God was in my life. You know, and your God. I'm not talking about my God. I'm talking about the God you believe in. But where's God? In your heart. And here, I'm just going to give you a little tip just from myself. You take it or leave it. My heart has never told me a lie. Not once. If I've ever said, oh, should I do this? It's never told me a lie. Never has my heart ever said, oh, you know, is it a good time to drink? Maybe let's go drinking. I'm going to ask my heart this. Oh, no. Hey, ask your heart that. Is it a good idea to drink? Heart absolutely will say no. If you're living in the truth, if you're living in the steps, if you're living in your heart, it'll say no. but your head will tell you a lie. So I have this problem, but I also have the solution. And I hope we live in the solution. And they talk about the solution is that we're happy. They talk about, oh my God, you're going to see life differently. And, you know, it's just unbelievable what can happen when you live in your heart. So, you know, there's the first three steps, and then we get to step four, and your step four might be a little bit different, but it's not. Even treatment center away, it all is pushing you the same way. And all of these steps are not pushing you, but they're all leading you to a power greater than yourself. They're all leading you to your heart. They're all leading you to God. Okay? And the closer you get to God, the happier you are. Right? I've been happy a long time. Like, I've been happy a long time. I had an old-timer come up to me and said, Ron, I told Jolene this the other day, is you have enthusiasm. And I'm like, oh, do I ever? And this is just when I first sobered up. I said, oh, yeah, I do, and stuff like this. He said, the Greek word for enthusiasm is the God within. And it's true. I had to go home and look it up, and it's the God within. Do you know if you live in your heart, it's just the beginning. Now, let me mark my words in this. Just because you know what the problem is my thinking will get me drunk. Okay, so my thinking is really no good until I get to step 11. Because by the time I get to step 11, I'm not thinking about me anymore. I'm thinking about how I can be of service. So you're not really even allowed to be thinking any of you guys here until you get to step 11. And then when they say you get to step 11, is we gave you a brain, and why don't you use it now? You know why? It's because now my thinking is in line with my heart, and now I can go out there and live an amazing life through my heart, and helping others, and loving others, and loving myself first, and then loving others. So I get to step four, and my sponsor said, hey, are you pissed off at anybody? I'm like, oh, am I ever? God. So I had like a list of hundreds, and I don't do it that way today. Today, when I take somebody through the steps, I go, give me your 10 best resentments that you got, like deep-rooted resentments. But I had hundreds. And I mean, I had to do like this work, a lot of work at the beginning. So we got to deal with the resentments. We have to deal with the fears. We have to deal with our relationships. We have to deal with the hurt. And we deal with that the best way we can. But all of this is bringing you closer to your heart. It's bringing you closer to an amazing way to live life through your heart and through the big book and through, you know, trying to do the right thing today instead of what you think. Don't live by what you think and what you know, because what you think and what you know got you here. Go with what your heart says. Believe me. So I go through step five, and then I get to step six, and it talks about my defects of character. And what are defects of character? I believe why we actually go back out drinking isn't because of all the deep-rooted resentments. I think, after doing a lot of this work, it has to do with my defects of character, and I'm going to tell you why this is really important is. Somebody might not like me. I'm going to use me as an example. Okay, I don't like that Ron. He's too loud. Right? So I would have that down on my step four. This guy, Ron, he's too loud. And why is because, you know, he thinks he's a know-it-all, whatever. So this is the work I'm doing, right? So I have to get to the part where, you know, how am I reacting to Ron? How am I reacting to Ron? And you know how I react to this loud guy, Ron? Do you know how I react? I'm judging him. That's a defect. You know what else I see about this loud guy? He's loud and I don't like him. That's it. No, maybe there's more. Maybe he knows everything or he tries to. So these are my defects of character. And what happens is this is how I'm reacting to Ron. So how you're reacting to me is the thing that really keeps me sick. So how I react to you is killing me. Because I would react to how my mother was. I would react to how that girl treated me. I would react to my boss threatening to fire me. And I would be reacting. And do you know how I was reacting? From what I thought. From what I know and from what I thought. So I was always reacting from the problem. And if you're reacting from the problem, you're anywhere near the problem, you're in the problem, you're in trouble. Right? You are. And that was killing me. So I believe my defect to characters, how I react to you, is everything. So what I had to do in step six, it says humbly ask him to remove our shirt. Oh no, step six is we're entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. By the time you get there, you know what your defects are. They're right there. And it's like, oh no, I'm mean. I'm like angry. I'm inconsiderate. I judge people. And do you know why we have these defects? I'm going to tell you why. We can actually use that. And I'm going to tell you why we need that information. It's because God wants me on the other end of that. So God does not want me to be mean to you any longer and to react mean to you any longer. God doesn't want me to start swearing at you anymore or whatever or treating you inconsiderate anymore. God actually wants me to love you. So I have to actually do the opposite. Believe it or not, you have to do the opposite. So if I'm really mean, got to be really nice, right? And I was mean. I wasn't right on wrong when I got here. I was mean and I was like angry and I was inconsiderate. Oh, you, and I was loud. I was even probably louder than this. But when you do the steps, it changes you, right? And this is the change that I always wanted. I didn't want to be that mean person and that angry person and that inconsiderate person. But how could I? But that was all part of who I was. So I needed to use that information to live the opposite of it. And that's step seven. Step seven is humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. Step seven is about I'm acting out on a defect of character and I can't really stop. So I might be swearing at y'all, hey, F you, or, you know, it's wrong. I need to do the opposite. I need to start treating people with love and kindness and consideration. And that's what step seven told me. And step seven, I can't do it with on my own. I need God. I need to listen to my heart. And I need a new plan of action. And my new plan of action is loving actions. Then I get to step eight and step nine. Okay, so I'm only going to talk for a few more minutes because I know I've talked for almost a half an hour. So I'm at step nine, and one of the most important things in my life is because I wasn't a good guy. I really wasn't. Even at 24, I wasn't. You know, I fought, and I lied, and I cheated, and I was mean, and, you know, just like everybody else. So just enjoy it, you guys, you know. Just enjoy that everything that brought you here today. So, I needed forgiveness, and I didn't know how forgiveness was. I didn't know what to do, but I needed forgiveness more than you did. I needed forgiveness before I made amends to anybody. I needed forgiveness, and I didn't know what that looked like. I didn't know how to do it. I know how to do it today. Forgiveness is loving you. If you want forgiveness in your life, I don't care what you've done. I don't care who you did it to. I don't care. If you want true forgiveness, the true forgiveness is loving you. So the best thing you can do for you right now is to live in your heart and stay here and follow what they say. And you know what? It's to love you. Because you're not loving yourself out there by drinking and giving up. You're not. So the best amends you can do for you is to love you. And I tell people that. I tell them, like, you know, when we have to make amends to people, and I'm really easy when it comes to amends. I'm not like, oh, geez, I owe you amends. Can I get together and make amends? No, I'm not like that. I'm like, hey, do you want to go out for coffee? You know what? I treated you really bad. And you know what? I don't even see I'm sorry. I'm like, I was wrong. I shouldn't have called you all those names. I treated you bad. And is there anything, like, I can do to pretty much fix this? You know, I was wrong. And I don't want to live like that anymore. That's an amends. Amends is fixing it, right? But you have to love you first. And then comes step 10. And step 10 is you continue to take personal inventory. When we're wrong, admit it. We promptly admit it. Step 10 is going through all the work daily. We just have this step and we just go through all the work daily. We have step 11 when we retire at night on the awakening. And we have to do that every night and every morning. You know, we read it. And step 11, when I retire at night, there's 9 questions in the big book that you have to answer. It kind of gets you through all the steps, step 11. it kind of takes you like, where was I selfish? Do I owe somebody an amends? Was I inconsiderate? So step 11, that's when you can start thinking again. They take you through all the steps. And then step 12 is helping others. You know, step 12 is helping others. And you know what? It's giving them the message of love, and it's giving them the message of the 12 steps. And that's what I try to give people today. You know, there is hope today. And I didn't have any hope. If you're sitting here with, you know, just a little bit of hope, that's more than so many other people that are out there who don't have any. And I know many of them. I get the cases that have no hope at all. And they're the ones that I love. I love everybody, but I love them more because you know what? I didn't understand how this works. And if you don't have hope, you know, you pretty well have nothing. So try to hold on to even just a little bit of hope. Try to stay here. Try to do this work. And if you're ever in Vancouver, lock me up. It's right on Ron. And you know what? I'm willing to help anybody, anywhere, anytime. And it's been like that from the very beginning, and it's still like that today. You know, so I've been very, very fortunate to have, you know, just amazing life through my heart, through the 12 steps, but through my heart, and to be able to do anything, you know, to go anywhere. And everywhere I go, there's meetings, there's people that love me, there's people that I love, you know, and it's anywhere. You know, everywhere I go now, you know, somebody, you know, there was a taxi driver. We were walking English Bay the other day. Hey, right on, Ron. You know, taxi driver saying hi to me. You know, people, let people get to know you. Let people love you. But the most important is that you love yourself. Thanks for my sobriety.
Yeah.
Right on.